The hour, we're not on. The hour of recess has expired. The Senate is now back in session. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. I seek unanimous consent to introduce some very special guests.
Seeing no objection,
thank
please
you, Mr. President.
Proceed.
I was waiting for the senator from Lewis to get out of my way. He was kind of crowding
the aisle
here. He was
in the way, right.
Yeah, he gets in the way a lot. Mr. President, to my right and to your left, it's my pleasure this afternoon to introduce Nathaniel Marsh of Eugene, who attends Lighthouse Preparatory School here in Jefferson City. Nathaniel is attending a four-day Team PAC conference, and I know many senators in this room are aware of that conference and may have some of their constituents there. I might add he's running for the office of Senator, Mr. President, in the Team PAC Senate. He's here with his father, Fred, a staff sergeant with the Missouri National Guard. Please help me give Nathaniel and Fred a warm welcome to the Missouri State Senate this afternoon.
Let's welcome Nathaniel and his father here. Have a great time. Thanks for coming to the Capitol. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of introduction of bills.
Senator from Newton.
Mr. President, would you refer Senate Committee Substitute Senate Bill 855, Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bills 586 and 651 to the Committee on Governmental Accountability and Fiscal Oversight?
It will be so referred. Senator from St. Francois.
I have a bill.
Send your bill forward.
No explanation necessary.
Please read the bill.
Senate Bill number 1143, introduced by Senator Romine, an act relating to rate making by the Public Service Commission.
Senator from Phelps.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a bill.
Send your bill
no
forward.
No explanation needed at this time.
Please read the bill.
Senate Bill number 1144, introduced by Senator Brown, an act relating to emergency rules.
Senator from the 5th.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have two bills.
Send your bills forward. Read the first bill.
Right over there, if you would. Okay, and have you? I'll be right with you.
Senate Bill number 1145, introduced by Senator Nasheed, an act relating to juveniles involved in certain crimes.
And read the second bill.
Senate Bill number 1146, introduced by Senator Nasheed, an act relating to the public school retirement system of the city of St. Louis.
Senator from Callaway.
President, I have a bill.
Send
explanation necessary at this time.
Send your bill forward. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill number 1147, introduced by Senator Riddle, an act relating to agricultural tax credits.
Senator from Franklin.
Mr. President, I have a bill. No explanation at this time.
Send the bill forward.
Okay, I'm going to introduce the
Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill number 1148, introduced by Senator Schatz, an act relating to distribution of local sales tax.
Senator from the 4th.
President. Thank you, Mr. President. I have a bill. No explanation necessary.
Send your bill forward. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill number 1149, introduced by Senator Chappelle Nadal, an act relating to the disclosure of information on radon hazards to buyers of residential real property.
Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. On behalf of the Senator from Johnson, I have a bill.
Send the bill forward.
Just one bill.
One bill.
And a quarter.
Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill number 1150, introduced by Senator Pierce, an act relating to township road districts.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Buchanan.
I might have the last bill.
Send the bill forward.
Senate Bill number 1151, introduced by Senator Schaaf, an act relating to motor vehicle franchise practices.
Yes, sir. Senator, would you care to explain your bill?
Yes, I would, Mr. President. This bill adds words to the statutes and takes some words out of the statutes with regard to motor vehicle franchise practices. Thank you.
Further introduction of bills. Senator from Green.
Mr. President, may I inquire of you?
State your inquiry.
Mr. President, this morning you referenced that you had three bills to introduce, and I just wanted to make sure that you didn't miss the opportunity to do that.
Well, I was going to introduce Bill Wyrick and Bill LaRue and Bill Smith, but that probably wouldn't be appropriate from the dais, so.
Okay. Well, I just didn't want you to get left out. Thank you, Mr. President.
Right, but thank you. Introduction of bills. Any other introduction of bills? Senator from Barrie.
Mr. President, may I ask a question of you?
Proceed.
Mr. President, before we got started in session, I noticed that there was a picture of me at the dais, and I didn't know if you knew anything about that, as how it got there.
There was?
Yes.
I don't know. We'll refer that to the Sergeant of Arms.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll work on that. Seeing no objection, the chair would like to introduce two special guests, Scott and Sarah Schmidt. They are here with the Baltimore Bend Winery from Waverly, Missouri in Lafayette County. So if they would please stand and be recognized, Scott and her brother, Sarah. Correction, Sarah and her brother, Scott. Okay. Any other introduction to bills? Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of House bills on third read. I'd ask that you call the calendar.
Seeing no objection, we will go the informal calendar. The informal calendar, Senator, is that what you're saying? Informal calendar.
House bills on third read.
House Bill 1575, that would be the Senator from the second.
Formal calendar, Mr. President.
Formal calendar. House bills on third reading on the formal calendar, and that will be House Bill 2203, Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Committee substitute for House Bill 2203 be brought before the body.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm just going to spend a few minutes on that on this bill. We've had a Senate substitute and a Senate committee substitute, and then now there is a Senate substitute, which was distributed to your offices and I believe is also on your desk. Just so I wanted to kind of run this out, let the members look at what's in the substitute, give you time to read it, and decide to take a few seconds explaining it, and then I intend to lay the bill over. Just I want everybody to kind of figure out. Again, Mr. President, this is another bill that was sent over to us from the House on ethics reform. This has, I believe, some common sense measures that, you know, when you talk about ethics reform, there's a lot of things that people say out there. I believe that you can't always legislate ethics, but I think you can do some things that certainly help you pass the smell test, and that's what I think 2203 does. 2203, when it came over from the House, prohibited campaign funds from being invested in anything other than a six-month-long CD or an interest-bearing checking account. Senate Committee substitute extended that investment to a year-long CD and added the language requiring a candidate committee to be dissolved before someone can register as a lobbyist. The individual can dissolve their campaign committee by giving the money back to the donors, to another candidate, to a political party, or a 501c3 charity. That's what the Senate Committee substitute did. The floor substitute adds a provision that prohibits anyone from making a donation to a committee and then getting paid by the committee to whom they made the donation. So I think these are all scenarios that we've probably seen or heard about in the last several years, certainly since we've been around. Again, I think this is more kind of common sense type ethics legislation. I have not sent the sub up yet, the floor sub, and I just wanted to walk through it, and then in the next day or two, I'd like to kind of talk to some of the members, see where they're at. I know how some of the committee members feel, and many of you, as I've talked to about this bill over the last couple of weeks, or maybe since it's been on the calendar, most people seem to think this is something that seems to make a little bit of sense. But I wanted everybody to have that floor sub in their hand to understand the progression of the bill as it came over from the House, what the Senate committee substitute, and then what the proposed floor substitute would do. Give you time to look at it, think about it, visit with me if you'd like. And with that, Mr. President, I would lay...
Senator, would you move for the adoption of that Senate committee substitute?
I have not sent the sub forward yet. I would move for the adoption of the Senate committee substitute is where I'll leave this. And with that, Mr. President, after I move for the adoption of that substitute, I am going to place this bill on the informal calendar, now that I've explained it.
The senator has moved the adoption of the Senate committee substitute, and that bill will be placed on the informal calendar. Senator from Cole has requested that we be on the House bills on third reading, and that next bill is House Bill 2226. Senator from Clay.
Thank you, Mr. President. I ask that bill be laid upon the informal calendar.
That bill will be placed on the informal calendar. The next bill is House Bill 1452. That is Senator from Cole. Next bill is House Bill 1452 and Senator from Johnson.
On behalf of the Senator from Johnson, Mr. President, I ask that bill be laid on the informal calendar.
Next bill on the calendar is House Bill 1891, Senator from Phelps.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that House Committee substitute for House Bill 1891 be taken up for third reading and final passage.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Phelps.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move that House Committee substitute for House Bill 1891 be third read and finally passed. This came from the House. This is known as paycheck protection. And Mr. President, I have a Senate substitute I'd like to send forward and have distributed.
Send your substitute forward.
And I move for the adoption of the Senate substitute.
Senator from Phelps has moved the adoption of the Senate substitute for House Bill 1891. Senator, would you care to explain your Senate substitute?
Yes. And I think we have a chart that will be coming out, too, that will kind of lay this out a little more clearly and probably what I'll do. The Senate substitute difference from the House version in that the Senate substitute permits electronic as well as written authorization of the withholding fees. It makes technical changes to some of the language, transparency language, as it pertains to federal record-keeping requirements. And it actually defines the term public employee first responder and limits its application for public employees and first responder exemptions. So what this act does, it allows public employee labor unions to withhold fees from public employee paychecks only upon the annual consent of the employee. This act also requires a public employee's annual consent for public employee labor unions to use fees and dues for political purposes. Any authorization required by this act may be in written or electronic form. The employee must authorize the amount to be used for political contributions to be transferred to the labor union's continuing committee, authorizing or refraining from reauthorization or authorizing any amount shall no way affect employment. And public employee first responders are exempt from the provisions. All public labor unions are required to maintain financial records in substantially the same form as is required by the federal law. Such organizations are further required to make records available to each employee that it represents in electronic searchable format, and represented employees have the right of enforcement of these provisions. So it's kind of a It's similar to what we passed a couple years ago as far as paycheck protection, but I think it has been lessened a fair amount. It's made it easier for both the employee and the labor unions to keep track of these things, and I'm sure there's still going to be some questions, and if there are, I'll try to answer some of those at this point.
The senator from Phelps moved the adoption of the Senate substitute for House Bill 1891. Senator from the second, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the president, from the senator from Phelps.
Senator from Phelps, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
So, Senator, your bill is sometimes known by the term paycheck protection.
Yes.
Correct. And this really pertains to whether a public employee's dues can be used for political purposes without that employee's consent. Is that
right.
Correct?
It says that it can't be coerced or forced as far as part of employment.
Right.
And it gives them some choices as to what political funds that they want those retained fees or dues where they want them spent on political purposes, which
right.
they don't have right now.
Right. You know, it occurs to me, Senator, that when you and I run for office, we all of us in this body spend a fair amount of time, raising money for our campaigns.
Yeah.
And we, I think no matter how hard we work, most of us are probably in the range of maybe 200, or so contributors. And yet, for instance, when I won my primary in August 2014, I got 14,300 votes. On the other hand, if you're a member of Ask Me or SEIU or Communication Workers of America working in a government job, under our present system, you don't have the choice of whether part of your dues get used for political purposes.
That's right.
In other words, as many folks as supported us and helped us get elected, we had a relative tiny handful of donors, and yet, public unions are essentially taking their members' money, coercing their dues contribution, coercing political contributions as a condition of employment. Am I being unfair in that characterization, Senator?
That is exactly how I understand it and how it has been explained to me by some of the members, actually. This is not, hearsay or some of my friends on the right told me this. This is what I hear from employees. A lot of those union dues were extracted from my own family members, and then they didn't support me.
Right.
That upset them a little bit.
Yeah. I think fundamentally, Senator, I think the question here is, do we believe in the First Amendment? Do we believe in free speech, or do we believe in compelled speech? Do we really believe that someone can be compelled as a condition of employment to be to support political views with which he or she may not agree?
Right.
And I think when we ask that question, I think Thomas Jefferson put it well. He said these words: to compel a person to furnish contributions of money for the propagation of opinions which he disbelieves or abhors is sinful and tyrannical. And not only is it being compelled, we've had the debate on so-called right to work legislation last year. In this
right.
case, it's the government doing it. It's the government cooperating
right.
with the public sector union in coercing political contributions as a condition of employment.
Right.
I think sinful and tyrannical, those are not my words, those are Thomas Jefferson's words. I think without your bill, Senator, we are going to continue in this state to compel political speech. We're going to continue to tell public employees, either fork up the money for union-supported political campaigns, or you're not, or you can't work here.
And a lot of the, the public employee labor unions are pretty good at collecting the dues, but they really don't
offer much help to the union members, at least in my area.
Right.
You know, a lot of times they've been members for 8 or 10 years and they've never even had a meeting or discussed any conditions of employment or whatever. So they feel like that they're just being, they're being mined of the money and it's nothing, a benefit coming to them.
Well, sure. If it's automatic, if the members don't really have a choice in it, if the unions are not being required to go to their members and ask for the money, that makes the job of the union boss very easy.
Right.
They can just sit back and be political power broker, decide which campaign they're going to support or oppose, and without really being accountable to their members. You know, I'm sure if any of the union bosses were here, they'd say, well, we're doing this for our members' own good. It's good for our members that we're doing this political activity, that we're supporting this campaign and opposing this candidate. You know, I ran into a quote also by Daniel Webster. Good intentions, in other words, they have good intentions. The AFSCME boss, the SEIU boss will say they have good intentions. They're doing it for their members. Good intentions will always be pleaded for any assumption of power. The Constitution was meant to guard the people against the dangers of good intentions. There are men in all areas who mean to govern well, but they mean to govern. They promise to be good masters, but they mean to be masters.
Right.
And to me, Senator, that is really what we're asking here today. Do we believe that union bosses should be masters of their members, or should they be servants of their members? Should they be able to spend their time being political power brokers and ignore their members, or should they have to go to their members and ask for the members' permission to extract political contributions from their paychecks? So, Senator, I'm sure you'll have a lot of inquiries this evening. You know, I would urge you to ask those who inquire of you a couple of questions. First of all, do you believe in free speech?
Right.
Do you really believe in free speech, or do you believe in compelled speech? Do you believe that someone should be compelled to support political positions and parties and candidates which they may not agree with? And do you agree with the First Amendment? So, you know, again, I'd conclude, Thomas Jefferson, to compel a man to furnish contributions of money for the propagation of opinions which he believes he either disbelieves or abhors is sinful and tyrannical. Senator, thank you for bringing forth this important bill. And
thank you for your inquiry. And, you know, one thing that we've seen that some of the union members may deny, but in states that have adopted paycheck protection, they've actually, in fact, seen an increase in union membership because the unions become much more responsive, much more involved to the members' concerns, and they actually get more members.
No, I've heard that too, Senator, and I've heard that and that union meetings all of a sudden are better attended.
Yeah.
Because people are invested.
And they actually have meetings.
People are invested in their unions, and the union bosses do have an interest in serving their members. So I think this is a very valuable pro-worker, pro-freedom, pro-First Amendment bill. And again, I thank you for bringing it forward.
Thank you.
Thank you for your inclusion.
Further discussion. Senator from the 5th, what purpose do you rise?
I would like to inquire the senator who's handling the bill.
That would be the senator from Phelps.
Yeah.
No, I'm good.
Senator from Phelps, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, you know, out of all due respect, this is some bullshit.
No.
What
Senator,
you're doing
Senator,
right now.
Senator, we will maintain decorum on the floor.
It says may, not shall, cursing. But anyway,
Senator, we will maintain decorum on the floor or you will no longer be recognized.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, what you're doing right now, what you're doing is trying to undermine and do away with unions as we know it. That's what you're doing. The question that I have for you is that did any union member come before you and say, this is what we need? This is what we want to happen. We want paycheck perception, deception, I call it deception, to come into law. How many union members came before you and said, listen, rally this cause, this is what we want? Or how many right-wing extremist groups came before you and said, let's undermine the movement of union as we know it? Like ALEC, like the Heritage Foundation. How many?
As
what are you
I
trying
said,
to do here?
Did you, with the comments that I had with Senator from the second, I talked about people that are forced unionized, or they pretty much have to be members of some of these unions. They're taking their fines or their fees and their dues, and then they couldn't direct those even to my campaign when I was running. Those are the people that brought this to me.
Senator, how many, Senator, how many people within the union movement came before you, came to the committee hearing and said, this is what we want. This is what we want you to push. No one. So this is not about, this is not about protecting those workers. This is about,
it's about protecting their money.
No.
About protecting their money and giving them the choice. Did you not hear our discussion between myself?
This is about weakening the union movement within the Republican Party. This is about making sure that the union movement is weak and that they cannot produce in a way that they have been and should be in any election. That's what this is about.
I think it's a pro-worker bill. I think it's a pro-First Amendment bill. And I think it's a pro-freedom bill.
They didn't ask you for it.
Yes,
they didn't ask you for this. How many members came to you and said, I want to be exempt? How many members came before you and said to you, Senator, that I would like to be exempt from paycheck deception?
You do not know who I have discussions with. My district has a lot of public union workers in it. A lot of them. Even my local fire people, they were supporting my opponent. Their union was, but they were supporting me.
Okay.
But none of their money came to me.
Okay. So listen. So let's say we exempt those individuals.
They still get the benefits.
They still get the benefits of being in a union. So why shouldn't they have to pay into the union if they're going to still get the benefits of being in a union?
Did you hear me talk about the one individual that's been a member of a labor union for 10 years and they've never had a meeting?